You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Sports stories rarely appear on the front pages of our newspapers, but recent events like reports of bullying in the NFL and the rise of head trauma diagnoses in athletes have been major exceptions. Josh Levine is the executive editor of Slate and host of the online magazine's weekly sports podcast called Hang Up and Listen, and NPR's Mike Pesca is a frequent panelist on those shows. Both of them join us today to talk about football, basketball, and the latest controversies in the sports world. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Leonard.
We should point out that you're going to be doing an event tonight across the street from our studios at the City Winery. Do you do most of your podcasts live in front of an audience?
No, this is a rare treat. I would hope that it was a treat for our listeners. We do a couple of these a year, yeah.
Last Sunday, the Miami Dolphins announced that they would be suspending guard Richie Incognito for misconduct after reports surfaced that he allegedly harassed fellow teammate Jonathan Martin. Is this an unusual story?
Well, I mean, it's just taken on dimensions that we've never seen in the NFL. The idea of bullying is hazing is pretty familiar to anyone who knows football. And sometimes football players don't call it hazing. They call it tradition. The rookies have to pay $15,000 for the veterans, you know, steak dinners and things like this.
But wait. Is it just football? Because we hear similar things. I remember Jim Boughton writing about similar things happening on teams that he played on in baseball.
Right.
We had a marching band with hazing. Fraternities have hazing. Is this just when guys get together?
Right. It's not just football. It's clearly any male-dominated society or subculture. But what we're seeing here with the tone deafness, I think that's the best way you could say it, regarding racial language and, you know, death threats and this one player reaching an absolute breaking point, that hasn't happened in the NFL. And it's challenging everything that we talk about the NFL and masculinity in a way that I don't know that the league is that comfortable with.
Well, in the end, isn't it a matter of Jonathan Martin being more sensitive than some people and his teammates saying, oh, Richie was just being Richie? They all expected that sort of thing from Richie Incognito.
Yeah, the thing that's so amazing about this is that Richie Incognito was on the Dolphins leadership council. This is the guy that the team has anointed as their representative. He's the one who is kind of setting the tone for what the culture is like in the locker room. Martin is certainly not the normative character there.
Well, was he the only person on the team who was involved in what we might call the harassment of Jonathan Martin?
Well, yeah. I mean, and Martin's camp has come out and said, no, it's not just Richie Incognito. But I think that the first indication so centered on Incognito, because that's where Martin pointed the fingers, because there were voicemails with death threats. And then if you go through Incognito's resume. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that they were maybe jokes one way. Yeah, I don't think they were death threats in terms of, you know, let's really call the police because we really think someone's going to kill me. But they kind of show just how violent and over the top some of the language was.
Well, hadn't a woman charged Richie Incognito with sexual molestation during a golf tournament last year? That seems to have been swept under the rug. So is a lot of this stuff just swept under the rug?
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins said we dealt with it, but what does that mean, we dealt with it? He didn't seem to miss any games, and it wasn't something that really seemed to tarnish his public image. His public image is already so tarnished from all the things that he's done on and off the field. And every time that really he's had something bad happen to him, either the team has swept under the rug, like you mentioned, or he's just signed on with another team that wanted his brand of toughness in their locker room.
And this is the problem, right? I think this is where the Dolphins, no matter what you think, this is where they run into a problem. They let Richie Incognito be the fulcrum upon which Jonathan Martin's entire career and success depended. And even if you thought that Richie Incognito turned a corner, and all his current teammates say they love the guy and he's a fun guy, but he was kicked out of both colleges he went to, and he was kicked off teams, and he was voted the dirtiest player, and he has this horrific resume. So let's say he gets to the Dolphins, and now he's good enough to be on the leadership council, and a lot of coaches think you give a player a carrot and you give him pats on the back and you give him affirmation, but to put him in a position where you say our second round draft pick, a guy who we need to be one of the most important positions on the team, we're going to let Richie Incognito have the final say if you succeed or if you fail based on if you show up to team to offensive line meetings in a strip club, which is an allegation that hasn't been refuted, that seems to be a problem. That seems to be a headache for the Dolphins.
Yesterday was the first day that Incognito spoke out since his suspension. Is he taking responsibility?
he kind of took responsibility in a slightly weaselly way, I thought. He basically said, if I went too far, then I'm sorry. He also said that if he was in a room with Martin, he'd give him a big hug. And he'd say, what's going on, guy? You know, how did we get to this place? But he said, it's really just a cultural thing. If you're on the outside, you might not understand. This is how we talk to each other. It's disgusting. But this is what we do in the NFL. He basically said, I'm a product of the NFL, not that I'm the problem here. The NFL is the problem.
And there's a suggestion that this is part of a bonding process.
Unless it's not, right? Unless you have Jonathan Martin, who, what is the phrase they kept using? Get him out of his shell. And I think you were the one who pointed out, you know, his shell, that might be his personality. Do they have no way to accept anyone who's not, you know, kind of a knuckle-dragging, let's have a team meeting in a strip club, let's change your, this is something that was in the documentary Hard Knocks, let's change your Facebook page to include some disgusting posts because that would be a good larf. I mean, if Jonathan Martin doesn't buy into this, what, he can't block Terrell Suggs?
Well, that was the question. Is he a good offensive lineman? Obviously, they didn't bench him.
Yeah, well.
Well, they did actually bench him. He's kind of had a struggle in his first couple of years, and I think he's not been the player that the Dolphins thought he was going to be. You could certainly argue that they have put him in a position to fail, giving Incognito control over his entire career. It seems like with friends like these, who needs enemies? But he has not been a great player in the league so far.
Should we assume that this sort of thing is happening on every team?
To some degree, let's say Tony Dungy said no hazing happened on my team, and people who have worked with Bill Walsh and those coaches who worked under him say that's the sort of thing they don't tolerate. And some coaches clearly tolerate it more. You look locally, the Jets and the Giants. I don't know much about the Giants. It seems to go against their culture more. The Jets love, and they use phrases like, this guy has a mean streak, and they love playing jokes on each other. And it's more frat boyish, and that comes from Rex Ryan. But, you know, it's not nothing in the NFL so far that we've seen has been to this degree.
Some, like NFL.com's Mike Silver, are speculating that neither Jeff Ireland, who is the general manager of the Dolphins, right, or Coach Joe Philbin will keep the jobs after this is over. What would have to come up in the investigation that would cause them to lose their jobs? Wouldn't a lot of football coaches and general managers be equally vulnerable?
I think that neither man has really distinguished himself with his win and loss record so far, so this could be an opportunity for them to get them out when they might have wanted to anyway. But there's been, you know, allegations so far that Ireland told Jonathan Martin he should punch Incognito. I think if that comes out in the investigation that he did that, he'll probably be gone. And I think if Philbin actively encouraged Incognito to, you know, quote, toughen him up, that would be something that might mean that he was out of a job.
Like Colonel Jessup, right? You ordered the code red.
My guests are Josh Levine and Mike Pesca. We're talking about what's going on in sports, and you're going to be doing a lot more talking about that tonight at the City Winery. Just recently, some prominent football players have been reported to suffer from CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. We've heard about a whole bunch in the past, but now Tony Dorsett, one of the greatest running backs in the history of the game, Mark Duper, a fabulous pass receiver. So should we assume that it's a lot more common than has been reported in the past? Is it kind of like PTSD for war veterans?
Well, I think PTSD, the percentage that I just did a report on, is 7% of people who experience some sort of trauma experience PTSD. It might be higher in football. They gave of the donated brains to the – and, you know, I mean, I heard you – interview the League of Denial authors on this show, but of the donated brains, and it's a select group, it's people who suspected they might be experiencing some sort of effect. Was it 62 out of 64 donated brains?
Something like that.
62 out of 64 showed signs of CTE, which should not happen for young people. It should not happen. A lot of these players donated their brains after, or their families did, after committing suicide. And now a few players have committed suicides by shooting themselves in the torso, which is an extremely rare way to commit suicide. And they do it to preserve their brains, to, you know, have doctors examine them afterwards to find out.
The thing about Dorsett and Duper is that they've been diagnosed while still living, which is a very new diagnostic technique, one that I think is still needs to be tested and is not yet proven. But that can certainly change the psychology of retired players if they know that they're living with this.
Yeah. Well, in light of the Richie Incognito story and these stories, should I feel guilty when I watch football on Sunday afternoon? I'm beginning to wonder whether I stopped watching boxing some years back, and I'm wondering whether this sport just, especially for younger players, isn't just too dangerous.
I was actually watching the Jets-Saints game the other weekend, and maybe you have a different perspective on this as a Jets fan since the Jets won. But as that game was going on, I was thinking there were just so many injuries, so many guys getting carted off the field, so many players out with concussions. I was like, why do I even care if my team is winning? It's just such a brutal game.
That I was didn't one notice of the, that because it was mostly Saints players getting carted off, right?
But no, still, I was thinking very much about concussions. One of their best players had a concussion very early in the game, and who knows what that means for his life and his career.
You know, and this came out with the Saints bounty scandal, where all these players talked about, players outside the Saints said that those coaches crossed the line, we never try to injure. You know, football's always been sold to us as a sport that's unavoidably violent. But, you know, when we are finding out more and more that it's not just unavoidably violent, at times it's gleefully brutal, that's hard to take. And if you put your head in the sand, and if announcers, this is the annoying thing to me, they seem to, you know, we know that ultimately their salaries depend on the NFL continuing, but only one or two of them, like Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, seems to actually be understanding the issue. And then you hear other guys, you know, Dan Dierdorf or some of these other announcers constantly downplaying the head trauma and the brutality of the game. There's a disconnect between what I'm watching and trying to get entertainment out of and what they're saying is happening.
And it's been pointed out that the two things most likely to get a lot of cheers are an amazing catch of a pass or a really horrific hit.
I think the culture of that is changing a little bit. Do you agree with that, Mike?
I think officially it is, and they're not putting out those videos of vicious hits. But, you know, the players who do it know that separating a man from the ball is the surest way to deny a completion. And that's not changing, and they get patted on the back for playing that way.
Do you think that the injuries are a reason that we're seeing such inconsistency, at least in the two local teams?
I think that that's the real reason why certain teams succeed and fail is how many guys are injured in the playoffs or get injured throughout the season. And it's a kind of an uncomfortable truth that people don't like to talk about.
Well, like Eli Manning, a Super Bowl MVP, and now he doesn't seem to be able to complete a pass.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I think most of Eli's...
It looks like Mark Sanchez has been giving him lessons.
They were explaining on The Fan this morning, Mike.
Oh, yes, tell me.
That the reason was that he got hit on a high percentage of his dropbacks, so now he's feeling skittish and he doesn't want to be patient with the ball anymore.
That's not implausible. I think most of Eli's travails are due to not just a bad, but a horrible offensive line. I mean, offensive line is the sort of thing that we intellectually say, oh, and the line is bad. But when it's bad, you can't do anything. But no one blames the left tackle. It looks like the quarterback's not getting the job done.
Well, the Jets have a better record than the Giants. They're 5-4, are in second place in the AFC East. Although the Giants are also in the running for playoffs, which has to do with the weird way that all of these things are determined. But you get the feeling that neither of these teams are going to do all that well. In the case of the Jets, it's because they have a rookie quarterback, or do you think it's something else?
I think Geno Smith is doing well and overperforming. I mean, the Jets were the team, the preseason power rankings, which I put no stock into, but they were ranked 32nd out of 32 teams on ESPN. You know, before the season, the talk was, will they get the number one pick as the worst team? And they're clearly, well, their record shows they're a little bit better than average team, so they've overperformed to that degree.
Now, the Red Sox won the World Series.
Yes.
To me, it just brings up two things. One, I was very pleased when the Red Sox won their first World Series so that I didn't hear any more griping from Red Sox fans.
Wait, you mean in 1902? Oh, you mean the most recent one. Yes, yes, in 2004.
What do you make of all those people who wear Red Sox caps, although they live in New York? Should we assume that they come from Boston or just want us to know that they went to one of the prestigious colleges in the Boston area?
I always assume Bentley. I don't know why.
I would assume that they just moved to New York because it's a superior city, but they just didn't want to purchase new caps.
There's let's talk a bit about the two basketball teams in New York. The Nets were predicted to be one of the best teams in basketball this year. They are not doing as well as one would have expected? Is it the coach?
Well, I think with the Nets, the players are so old for the NBA, guys like Garnett and Pierce, that you really have to kind of drag them through the regular season and assume that if they're healthy, which is questionable, then they'll be a formidable opponent for anyone in the playoffs. But you really, if that team makes the playoffs, then I think they'll be dangerous once they're there.
And then the Knicks look like contenders one game, then they're handed an embarrassing loss like the one they had last night, 120-89.
Yeah, and I think there are 2-4, and one of the teams they beat was the Bobcats. So they have not played well at all. And their whole team hinges on, let's clear it out for Carmelo Anthony. I'm a Knicks fan, although since the Nets have moved to Brooklyn, I've been attracted to them too. I kind of hate the Knicks brand of basketball. It just, aesthetically, let's clear it out and let Carmelo do his thing, and let's not pass, and let's play okay defense. I mean, and you know, my favorite player is now on the bench for 4 to 6 weeks. They're big men, so I'm having trouble rooting for the Knicks these days.
Now, we have very little time, but you barely hear about hockey anymore in New York and soccer.
Yes.
The Red Bulls were in the playoffs. I don't know.
They won the President's Shield. Is that the name of the shield for the best team in the MLS?
Probably.
I think it was. They had the best record, but they lost a home and home to the Houston Dynamo. I know this because the MLS guy was begging me on doing a report on the Red Bulls, and I was saying, I definitely will when they progress into further rounds in the playoffs, which didn't happen.
Oof. Yeah. I'm from the South, so I don't even know about these hockey things that you speak of.
It seems to me it reflects changing tastes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, soccer is getting.
I mean, the Rangers
huge.
Used to be a major team in New York sports sensibility, and now they've kind of disappeared. They usually are relegated to the back pages of the New York Times.
Well, hockey fans are incredibly rabid, and it's a smaller group of people than will follow a basketball or football team. But wouldn't, if the Rangers do incredibly well this year, wouldn't you start to see the jerseys out? And
yeah, their year in 94 when they won the cup and the Knicks were in the finals, I think the Rangers were a bigger deal. But it's like that Red Sox thing. They hadn't won it for, 50 years, 54.
Slate's Hang Up and Listen will be live tonight at 7:30 at the City Winery. Sports editor Josh Levine, NPR's Mike Peskin, also Stefan Fatsis will be there, joined by Bob Costas.
Yes, you've heard of him.
You're going to be doing a live taping?
It'll
and then
live.
What happens to this? When is it made available for podcasts?
It'll be posted on Slate late tonight, and you can get it on demand after that. There are a few tickets still left. You can go to slate.com/hangupnyc if you want to get a last-minute ticket to see us and Bob Costas.
And thank you both for being on our show, Josh Levine and Mike Peska. Hang Up and Listen on Slate.
You're welcome, Leonard.